Welcome to Unusual Sources. This is Jessica speaking. We have a jam-packed show today. We have Cindy Sheehan going to be talking about her anti-war initiatives, and later on we'll be talking about Iran.
And we're back here on Unusual Sources, bringing you the news you don't ordinarily get to hear in the corporate media, bringing you new perspectives and special voices from the community and from abroad. And we're very pleased today to have with us Cindy Sheehan. And we're very grateful that Cindy's taking time out of her very busy schedule to be on the program with us today. She's all over the country, involved in a lot of activism right now. And she's someone who needs no introduction. But of course, she is the famous U.S. anti-war activist who became involved in this activism to end the war in Iraq and Afghanistan after the tragic death of her son Casey in Iraq. And she is the founder and president of Gold Star Families for Peace. And well, let's see if we have her on the line. Cindy, can you hear me? We very much appreciate you taking the time out of, as I said, your very busy schedule for this. You are an inspiration to us here in Hamilton, and the people in the anti-war movement continually circulate your articles, and we're watching how you're doing everything you can to keep it alive, keep people motivated, and being at the forefront of this whole issue. Now we spoke last in 2005 when you had begun your activism at that point, and the media had begun circulating stories about you. It came to our attention, and what we had learned about the tragic death of your son, and we were discussing that activism. And since that point, you've made strides not only in showing Americans the futility of the AFPAC war, the Afghanistan war, and the Iraq war, but also you've expanded your activism to include an analysis or understanding of the war machine itself, how it all works. And we're going to be talking about that later on. But what really interested me is there's been a series of events that you've been involved in since late summer, coming into the fall now. And,
right.
and you know, for our listeners who may not be aware of those, I know that the two of them in particular that stand out to me are your actions at Martha's Vineyard and also in Washington, D.C. Could you just briefly tell us a little bit about what you were doing in those actions and how you were organizing them?
Well, you know, I have never stopped being against the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan now. And I didn't support Obama when he was running for president because he said he would expand Afghanistan. And the withdrawal from Iraq that he promised that hasn't started yet, to me, was not what the anti-war movement had been demanding from Bush. So I didn't support Barack Obama. And the minute he was elected and then when he was sworn in, I kept on just trying to point out to people that, you know, the policies are continuing. And most people in the anti-war movement would tell me to give him a chance, give him time, all that kind of stuff that I think is just really horrible when people are dying and still dying, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan this week at a horrible rate, a needless rate and a necessary rate. Even one person dying in these stupid wars is too many. So I kept on at my anti-war activism. I have a radio show every week that brings up all of these issues. I wrote a book called Myth America, 10 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class and the Case for Revolution. I went out on a 40-city book tour from April till the end of July. And then I kept on getting people telling me, why aren't you protesting Obama? Are you a hypocrite? Well, no, I have been, you know, speaking out and protesting Obama. So when he announced that his family was going to take this exorbitantly expensive $50,000 a week trip to Martha's Vineyard, just some local area activists in Martha's Vineyard and in Cape Cod just said, we need to protest Barack Obama on his vacation as we protested George Bush. And then we need to have Cindy Sheehan be involved because she's still against the war. She's known for protesting presidents on their vacations. And then we had just a real full week organized, and unfortunately, Senator Ted Kennedy died. So that kind of took the wind out of the sails of our protest there. But I'm writing the expanded version of Myth America. It's called Myth America 2, 20 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class, and I think you were talking about that class, that analysis that I'm doing about the class division in the world, not a political division, not a racial division, not national divisions, but really the world robber class getting together to rob us here in the robbed class. So in September, I went to the G20 protest in Pittsburgh to protest that what the G20 really it was getting together was just to figure out how they can get more of the money and get more of the power and take more away from us. So we went there to have our voices heard, and of course our protests there were violently suppressed. The United Police States of America aren't doing, you know, crowd suppression anymore or dissent suppression. They're doing protester attack. And they would disperse us, we would disperse, and then they would chase us. And I saw so many acts of violence from the police state onto people who were peaceful protesters. And then I think you're talking about October 5th, we had some anti-war coalition have a protest in front of the White House. We had about 500 people there, and I think about 62 of us got arrested. I chained myself to the White House. Barack Obama was in there demanding he was in there having a meeting with his war council. And my whole thing is, what do you expect your war council is going to tell you? Of course they're going to tell you that we need more troops and we need more war. And so I demanded a meeting with him to say, you need to listen to the voices of reason, not just your war council. You need to listen to a peace council for once.
Well, you know, one of the ways you've expanded your analysis and understanding of the war machine is looking at the complicity of the Democratic Party in this machine. And, you know, I'd be really interested to know, when did you first adopt the view that Democrats were part of the problem, or did you always have feelings of that nature?
Well, you know, I always, you know, here in America, we're just like, really, you know, I think we know that the system is corrupt and there's little difference between the presidential candidates, for example, in the federal election system. I think, you know, we really get that, but we just have such a cynical, you know, outlook on it. It's like, well, we're just going to vote for the lesser of two evils. And that really came into sharp focus for me in 2004 when the anti-war movement, and I had just started to be a part of it because my son was killed in April and the elections were in November that year. You know, when the anti-war movement supported John Kerry, and John Kerry was just another militarist, you know. And so anyway, I started to really start having my doubts about that. And then in 2006, it was just my doubts and my suspicions and my fears were confirmed when the Democrats used the energy of the anti-war movement to come into power in both houses of Congress, and then protected George Bush, gave George Bush immunity from spying on us electronically through the FISA Modernization Act. They, you know, funded his wars completely, and so that's when I left the party, and just I'm not going to be a part of something that is so against my values and against what I believe in. And if there's one good thing that comes out of the Obama administration, I hope that the Americans finally wake up to the fact that it's not a two-party system, it's a one-party system, and in the federal government, that party is the war party, or Gore Vidal called it the banker's party. Whatever we call it, it's just two different wings of the same bird.
Well, I think people, as you say, are increasingly understanding that there is very little difference between the parties on many of these major issues. But on the other hand, it seems people are willing to give Democrats, and particularly President Obama, the benefit of the doubt. And there's been a fall off in activism, it seems, about the war. And in terms of your demonstration at Martha's Vineyard to protest Obama's vacation during this time of killing, there's been some debate over what the biggest story of that demonstration is, besides the demonstration itself, of course. And, you know, on the one hand, some people have pointed out that instead of the mass mobilization that characterized the demonstrations against Bush, in this case, you seem to be being faced by a deafening silence, or as you put it, a silence that was crashingly deafening with some of the major organizations like the Progressive Democrats of America and United for Peace and Justice being relatively quiet. But on the other hand, you've given a somewhat different perspective on this, a more subtle interpretation, because you mentioned, and I quote, that the demonstration received endorsements from three of the most effective national anti-war groups, the Veterans for Peace and a number of other organizations, plus a dozen others from smaller groups. And the large groups that supported the anti-Bush, anti-war message of the Camp Casey in Crawford seemed to be missing in action physically and spiritually from the actions in Martha's Vineyard. So,
well, Veterans for Peace, of course, was at Camp Casey. Iraq Vets Against the War, their national board did also endorse action on Martha's Vineyard, and World Can't Wait. And so those seem to be the three anti-war groups that we can count on to be anti-war no matter who's president. And like you said, the other groups, Unite for Peace and Justice, of course, Move On is not an anti-war group. They're a pro-Democrat group. Code Pink, Military Families Speak Out, those people didn't come out or endorse those organizations or members, and, you know, it's because they all supported Obama, even though Obama is just doing what Obama said he was going to do, and that send more troops to Afghanistan. And how can if you're anti-war, how can you support somebody that's pro-war? And so now all of a sudden these groups are doing things like petitioning, like signing petitions to Obama, like, that is really going to be effective. And one thing, Brendan, in the anti-Bush movement we had, from especially 2005 after Camp Casey, when, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were involved, that we could mobilize 600,000 or 700,000 people on a Saturday, which to me is really stupid anyway. We could mobilize those numbers, but we had no chance of being successful because we had a Republican president and a Republican Congress. Now that there's a Democratic tyranny in our government, we can't mobilize 600 people. And this might be the time when we would actually, you know, tell the Democrats to, this is like a kind of a crude thing, but it's very appropriate, to piss or get off the pot. You know, you guys came into power on the backs of your anti-war base. You're betraying that base, and we want real change. And so why can't we mobilize those numbers when the policies are identical to the policies that we supposedly protested under George Bush?
Yes. Well, I know you only have a couple of minutes, so I'll be brief. But, well, I remember during the Clinton era, when he was bombing the Balkans, the war with Yugoslavia, I was present during the protests at that war, but it was very difficult because people tend not to see Democrats as aggressive presidents. And I'm wondering, when you're trying to draw people's attention to the fact that things have remained the same under Obama, that if Bush is a war criminal, then Obama must be a war criminal too by maintaining that war.
Were
you trying to draw that attention at Martha's Vineyard? What was your response from Obama? Did you get a response from Obama?
No, we haven't received any. I mean, we at least got a response from the Bush administration, and that was no. You know, but that's just like the same tactic that Nancy Pelosi deployed when I ran against her in San Francisco, was just a total, you know, ignoring the fact that you do have an anti-war base, you do have a peace movement, or Pelosi ignoring the fact that she did have, a challenger when she ran for Congress in 2008. So that's the difficulty that we're facing, is that many people here in the movement, we're tired, we're broke, we're discouraged, and we just need to realize that, you know, babies are dying for no reason, whether they're babies in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, or some mother's child here in America who 23 died in the past couple days. They'll be coming home in body bags. And that's not even abating. So since Obama's been president. So we're doing, I don't know if you've heard of my new proposal piece of the action, PEACE of the action. We're trying to mobilize 5,000 people to come to Washington, D.C. in the spring. And every day, Monday through Friday, we're going to have 1,000 people go to 10 different locations, so 100 people in 10 different locations, to shut down intersections, to shut down buildings, to just clog up the empire. And we're going to do it every day, and our demands are simple. Troops out of Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, no drone bombings, no contractors, close the torture prisons, and close the permanent bases. And we're not going to stop until our demands are met. And, I mean, it's the most ambitious anti-war effort, I think, that we've ever had, but I think it's the only thing that is going to work. Marching from point A to B on a Saturday is not going to change policy. Having a couple, having a couple hundred of us stand in front of the White House is not going to change policy until we start hitting the people in our government where it hurts. Nothing's going to change. So I'm hoping we can get 5,000 people to join us. And I'm not going to start till I have 5,000 people. So we're hoping we're going to start around March or April.
Absolutely. I'm going to mention at the end of this interview where people can find your blog so that they can learn more information
Great.
About this. Okay.
Great.
Well, before we go, just one quick question. You've spoken and written about the growing elements of a police state in America, as if you've alluded to here. And I understand you were hit by an LRAD, one of those long-range...
I was.
Yeah, tear gas chase. It sounds terrible. And
right.
I'm just thinking, this must have special meaning to you because the LRAD seemed to be developed for crowd control and was deployed in Iraq. And I guess if it was good enough for the Iraqis, it was good enough for the Americans, because now so many American protesters, like at the G20 meetings, have gotten a taste of it. So how did you feel about the deployment of those kinds of devices in America?
Well, of course, I think that it is despicable and monstrous, and I think it definitely goes against our Bill of Rights, our First Amendment right to peaceably protest. And here we have troops supposedly fighting for our freedom and our safety in foreign countries, and my own son was killed supposedly doing that, and his mother can't even gather peacefully to protest, to have our voices heard. They're getting so good at shutting down our voices, and it's just very disheartening to me, but we can't give up. We have to just, more of us, fight harder. And what I understand is when I had the weapon deployed against me at the G20, that was the first time it's ever been used on American soil. And so we just have to, however hard they attack us, we have to very courageously resist it and not let them shut our voices down, not let them stop us from doing, you know, the very things that make us American. So that's, I'm just encouraging people. And one of the reasons we're doing Piece of the Action the way we're doing it, in a spread out way. We're not going to tell the police where we're going to be every day. We're not going to get permits. We're going to do it 10 different places, 10 different times every day. It's to diffuse some of that police state, because the police state in Pittsburgh surrounded us. Wherever we went, we were surrounded by, you know, two or three times more cops and soldiers than there were protesters. So we're going to do Piece of the Action so we can diffuse some of that state violence against us.
Well, that's Cindy Sheehan, and we thank Cindy so much for taking the time to be with us on the program today. And Cindy, it's clear to me that Cindy continues to organize, she continues to resist, and in that way, she is a true leader, because she's still leading and a true champion for peace. And even though Obama won a Nobel Peace Prize very recently, I think it's clear who in America really deserved the Nobel Peace Prize. So we thank Cindy so much for being with us today. And I just wanted to mention that her blog is called Cindy's Soapbox. Cindy's Soapbox. So if you go to Google and look up Cindy's Soapbox, you'll be able to find her blog, and it has information about everything she's talked about. And one of the critical things that we've learned in this interview is that Cindy's been doing an analysis of the economy, the economic situation in the United States, how it relates to the war, how the war has been devastating the economy, how how there's been increasing repression, how the lives of Americans are being twisted as a result of this war. And she's written a book on that subject, which is entitled Myth America, 10 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class and the Case for Revolution. Very exciting title. And I'm told that she's updating that into a 20 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class, because apparently the extent of greed and this kind of greed and corruption in America has been understated. So Cindy's really been taking the lead in discussing that. So you should pick up a copy of Myth America, 10 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class and the Case for Revolution, or even the updated version if you can get a PDF file. I believe you can order it directly from her website. It's very easy. So please do investigate that, because Cindy Sheehan does have a new book going around. And the other issue, of course, is that she's looking to mobilize people in the United States, bring them 5,000 people or more into new activism in the United States. So you can learn more about that and every issue that we've discussed here on her blog, Cindy Soapbox. She has blog, website, contact information, discussion of activism, and so forth, showing that she's keeping this struggle alive and setting an example of what can be done and what should be done in the United States and also in Canada. So, again, we very much appreciated Cindy being able to be with us today on the program.